I moved to Nashville for a reason, to get away from people being undercut for their work ethic and their talent, to come to a place where music was actually considered a legit vocation. So why not jump in with both feet?
Welcome, everybody, to the Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 30.
Yeah, happy May, everyone. We're kicking off this month with Matthew Kraus, who is, of course, the founder and co-host of the Working Drummer Podcast. And they've recorded over 400 episodes. I think their newest one out this week is with Bruce Becker.
Awesome.
Born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, Matt studied music at the Capital University Conservatory under Bob Brayhout. And Matthew moved to Nashville in the summer of 1999. And so he has been here longer than most of our guests. And with that longevity comes wisdom. It was so good to sit down with Matt and learn so much from him. Matthew really represents the true working drummer, which is appropriate, of course, with his podcast, the Working Drummer Podcast. And we go into not only the early beginning of how he started the podcast and how he was searching for that creative outlet, but also Matthew has really touched all facets of the industry himself as a professional, from touring to coming off the road. We talked about that work-life balance and raising a family, but also how he's adapted to Nashville from playing on Broadway to diving straight into home recording. We so appreciated Matthew's honesty and perspective on a lot of these important topics, and it was a real pleasure to finally get to sit down and chat with him.
It really was. Before we get going, we want to take a second to thank our patrons. What it's called?
Patrons? It is patrons. Yeah, yeah. Sounds kind of weird. It sounds very formal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our patrons. Friends.
Thank you, patrons.
Supporters. Yeah.
Those of you who have donated and committed to donating on Patreon. We got Brian Dendy in Minnesota, Matthew Williams in Arizona, Nathan Clark in the UK, and Beth Carlson in Nashville. Love you, Beth. You're awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much, everyone, for that support. And if you are interested in the Patreon, you too can become a member and help support what we're doing. Just go to patreon.com/Nashville Drummers Podcast, and that's all linked in our Instagram bio.
Before we get started, I'd like to take a moment to thank our newest sponsor, Drumbox, Nashville's newest practice space for drummers. Hey drummers, do you need a place in Nashville to practice on actual drums? Drumbox is Nashville's newest drum practice studio. Book sessions online and get the space to yourself. It's fully equipped with two kits, cymbals, hardware, and even sticks are provided. 30-minute, 1-hour, and 2-hour sessions are available at www.drumbox.space. And use the coupon code NDP25 for 25% off your first session. Again, that's www.drumbox.space.
This interview is starting as I thought it would, as a bunch of podcasters sitting in a room just chatting.
Yep.
Which is great. That's how it should be.
Dude, don't get me started. For sure. Well, I am honored that you guys asked me to be here, for sure.
We've been looking forward to this one for a long time. And
yeah, dude, thank you.
Definitely wanted to reciprocate. You know, when you had me on a few months ago, that was really special.
So. Well, having you alone would have been great. I just like seeing what technology is allowing people to do now with whatever they can devise. Mm-hmm. Like, really, there is no limit. And I was thinking, I don't know what you guys have prepared. I don't know what you're going to ask. And it seems really weird for me. I've been on other podcasts before, but to not have to prepare,
yeah.
I still want to prepare it somehow.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about, like, what you guys have done is take technology that's available now that wasn't available before, and like, how do we do this the way we want to do it? How do we do it with our own unique stamp on it?
Yep.
You know, so again, it's interesting having been on other podcasts, and I think early on there was one called Around the Kit with Joe Ganzis. And it was like a streaming thing, and he's from New York. And we spent a lot of time talking about like different drumming podcasts. And he's like, people were wondering why I have you on as a guest. Like, aren't you competition? He's like, no, it's not competition. I was like, that's not how this works.
Right. Yeah, it's never felt that way.
You know, and I think that we try and put those things, put competition, put that label on different things. I don't know, somehow to figure it all out.
Yeah.
And podcasts and information and the drumming community is not the place for that, you know, for sure. So.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Why don't we start there? I mean, for those that don't know you, obviously, Matthew Krause from the Working Drummer podcast has been around since 2015.
Yeah.
That's just crazy, right? Like, I remember I graduated college 2015. And I feel like I remember, and like we have our, you know, our background of how we met, which we don't necessarily need to repeat, but just I remember feeling like the podcast had been around for so long, even though like it was pretty.
In 2015?
Yeah.
When we met?
When we met, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that says something for, you know, all the great work that you guys are doing. And like it has that long, that feeling of longevity and just history.
Yeah.
You know,
when we met, I was really not sure what we were doing. And we were in the beginning stages of people even knowing what a podcast was.
Right.
True. Yeah. It was a different time for podcasts.
It was the Wild West.
Forget drumming podcasts.
Yeah, for sure. There was no like website where you could say, hey, want to start a podcast? Just insert your audio here and we'll do the rest. And you really had to build it from the ground up. So it took a lot of work. And when we met, I was doing it by myself. The first year was by myself before Zach Albetta came on board.
Yep.
And I was spending a lot of time working on it. And you were up in Indianapolis. My old boss, Jeff Hartso, who I worked with at Columbus Percussion, was there and was a part of PAS. So what a great opportunity to catch up with him, talk about the museum. We were doing some video things that we since are not doing anymore. You know, we were just doing mostly, you know, 99% audio only now. But that, when you contacted me when you were going to move to Nashville or when you had just moved to Nashville, I remember that, you know.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, you know, driving up there to see Jeff, being with my best friend's older brother who came up with me, seeing the museum, seeing Neil Peart's Chromie kit, all those great things. And then to top it all off, I don't know if you know this, but one of the mic cables that went to my microphone did not get plugged in all the way.
Oh, it's the first time I'm hearing about that.
Yeah, this is probably the worst audio flub of the over 414 episodes
that's
we've
so
done.
Wild.
And it was with that interview with
Jeff
Hartso.
That one. Right. Yeah.
So there's a video of us.
Yep.
And I go back and I realize all you can hear is Jeff's microphone. And I'm like, I can't drive back up and do the interview again. And I felt like Jeff was doing me a solid by making himself available.
Yeah.
And he was connected with PAS. And that was just like such a big deal for us because we were just getting started. So I didn't want to squander that time and effort.
Yep.
So I thought, well, it's time to do some old school voice overdubs.
Wow.
Because we had the video, I could actually watch myself. And every time I'd go,
oh my gosh.
I could barely hear my voice.
Yeah.
And so and I was going through and I'm going, I was in my studio going, yeah, ha, 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 ha. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to listen back to that.
That is hilarious and also brilliant.
So if you listen to that, it sounds like, because you know, there's movies you see, we were talking about Star Wars before we started, that like, you know, all that stuff is overdubbed.
Right.
Yeah.
I was literally doing that.
That's insane.
And I'm listening to myself going, mm-hmm, ah-ha-ha-ha, and trying to do that. And it was so awkward, but I just wanted to, I'm like, I can't go back.
Was there a point, was there a point while you were doing the overdub is you were like, this is just ridiculous, like it's not going to sound natural? Or you just told yourself, like you just said, like there was no way you could go back, so you had to make it work.
I was all in, man. Yeah. I mean,
Thank God you had the video, right? I mean, that really saved it.
I think so. You know? And I don't think that we've gotten lazy with the podcast. I think that we've prioritized the work that we put into it and how we want to deliver our podcast. Mm-hmm. In over time, Zach and I have had these conversations and say, how do we want to manage social media? How do we want to produce this thing? Do we want to do video? People are like, man, you should set up a camera and do this. And it's like, and I know it's a lot easier to do now, but I think that what we've done is we have – the podcast is very important to me and it's very important to Zach, but we want to put it in a place in our life so that it is consistent and we can put it out every week. And yet we can stay connected with other things, whether it's gigging, time with our family, taking care of ourselves physically, mentally. And the podcast in the beginning was all consuming.
You know,
to get it going. And then once it started going, people are always like, how do you keep it going? I honestly don't know. It just happens. And now we have, I mean, it's to the point where we literally have guests that find us or agents around the country that say, hey, Daru Jones, his episode came out yesterday.
No.
This morning. Sorry.
Awesome.
This morning.
Yeah.
His people contacted us and say, he's got this new book out. Would you be interested in having him? And that's an example of not having to chase down people. Now, that still happens.
It's kind of running itself, both sounds like from the production standpoint and even just booking guests, releasing content. Like, you guys have such a great formula that works.
Right. And I feel like we have our lane. And then when the Drum Click approached us to become a part of their community, it was kind of the it gave us this kind of like, you're doing the right thing for what you guys are willing to put into it. Concentrate on the conversation, concentrate on the content itself, and then being a part of the larger community allows us to then still maintain this hands off as far as how much we want to do with social media. We could always do more.
Yes.
You know.
But it's not, that's not everything. The conversation is the most important part.
Right. Yeah. I mean, granted, we have quantity.
Yes.
That's right. This time.
Yeah. Yes.
But we want quality to be the tip of the spear with it, the conversation itself.
I love that. What a great way to put it.
Right. And that's what I've always loved about your podcast is it really is. You can tell that it's always about, any podcast should be about that conversation, especially in a guest, you know, interview style that we both have.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's something that I think Nate and I are trying to balance always, right? I mean, the other side to that, of course, like we're doing the videos and putting more, you know, time into the social media, but like it does have to always still be about the interview and the conversation because you can't promote a bad, like, you know what I mean?
You can dress up a bad interview. But
with,
I wouldn't want to.
With sexy video and photos and... So yeah, that's cool to hear you say that, you know. And
but I feel like one thing that you guys do so well in presenting what you've created, the time that you're spending filming and interviewing your guests, is that with the social media and the amount that you're posting, the way that you're posting, the accessibility is then you're allowing people to discover the work that you've put into it. Mm. And that's where I feel like we need to do more of. You know, there's always more to do.
Yeah, it's a balance.
But how do you, where's that tipping point in which you're like, okay, too much?
Yeah.
Like if you post one more, I swear to God, I'm blocking you.
We've all been there probably.
Not you, the royal right, you, right. You know, like
it's, yeah, exactly.
It's like, man, too much. And then, cause I have people that I love that I am just like, you need to just stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send me a picture of your dog and maybe a gig or a new snare drum, but I swear to God.
Or I'll take a picture of your kid once a month.
Yeah.
But I don't need five pictures of your kid every day.
Yeah, right.
I love your kid. I also think your kid is adorable and interesting and brilliant. But do I need it five times a day?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
It's getting lost in the shuffle.
There is, for sure, there is a limit.
Yeah.
Even with really digestible, enjoyable content. Like, you know what? As much as I like this thing, I love Rice Krispies Treats. So yesterday was my birthday. I had Rice Krispies Treats for my dessert. That was my
choice.
Happy
birthday. You can vote.
Thank you. Thank you. No. Yes. Finally 18. 35. But point being, I love a homemade Rice Krispies Treat, not that store-bought garbage.
Yeah, for sure.
But if I had Rice Krispies Treats every day, multiple times a day, I would be very disgusted with
it. Sure. I don't know. There's so much. I can't think of one thing that would be too, I mean, there's always a point of like, okay, that's too much, but that's a good, analogy.
Even in marriage, mm-hmm. you know, I decided to spend the rest of my life with this person and I do not regret that at all. Mm-hmm. But I cannot spend every waking moment with that person because I will go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And she probably will too.
Yes. We will. I certainly will make her crazy if I don't break up the Nate content with.
How long have you been married?
It's going to be 10 years in September.
That's great, man.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
10 years. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've gotten to this point yet. It's going to be 23 years for me.
Awesome.
And we are now at the point where she's like, okay, I need you to leave. It's time for me to do my thing. So do you have a podcast to edit or practice or, you know?
I love that. That's great. That's very healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. See ya. And especially like on Fridays and Saturdays, especially like when I would be gone those regular nights when you're almost out every time, you know, for gigs or whatever. And then the one time you're home, she's like, do you not have a gig tonight? Like, this is my time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Kind of get used to like the schedules and.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, listen, it's time to watch Big Bang Theory. I'm not going to watch it. Okay. You do your thing.
Yeah.
And enjoy your show. I'm going to go woodshed rudiments in the back room for an hour and a half.
Right.
Have a great one.
Yeah. Or to find somebody that is supportive of this really unpredictable business and this very loud instrument and all these things is a godsend.
Yes.
You know, for sure. To find people that support you. And I mean, I'm very blessed, and it's taken me, unfortunately, a long time to recognize how blessed I am with that. But after so long, it's like I feel like we're now coming to this point now where it's like, man, we're really having fun. Like we're really just enjoying each other and stuff like that. And it's really cool.
Interesting. Yeah. What would you attribute that to exactly? Like figuring out those things like, oh, this is the time she needs her time and she's now able to communicate that. Because that's not like a first couple of years thing. You don't get there quickly.
No, you don't. I think being honest with each other is really important and not being afraid to say, I need some space.
Yeah.
And then for her to be like, I need that too. Mm. Great. Where can we come back together? You know, it's like, can we make plans to do something in a couple of days? Hey, can we do lunch together?
Yeah.
And let's look to that. Meanwhile, I can go do my thing because being self-employed, every day is different. Every week is different and you have to manage your time. Now, I have a just turned 18-year-old son who is wanting to get into music. Mm. And so I'm always like, listen, if you are going to work for yourself, you're not going to have somebody over you and say, oh, you come in at this day, this time of the day, you work for this, you do this, you accomplish this. You have to set your own personal goals. You have to be self-disciplined.
Yeah.
And so that means that you have to be able to manage your time. And so my point is that part of my managing my time is making sure that I'm attending to my relationship and keeping that healthy. But so she knows I'm going to take some time to work. And so I'm not working at the same time that she is. She's working pretty much 9 to 5 is her work. And sometimes I can do that and be done when she's done. But at the same time, I have work at night. I have to go to gigs. I have to finish, you know, recording a song or whatever because it has to be out the next day. Right. That way we have these points to look for, like, oh, that's right. We're going to do lunch on Thursday because I'm going to be out for the weekend. So then I'm not thinking, oh no, I'm editing this track. She's upstairs. She's okay with that.
Yeah.
Because she knows that Thursday we're going to go to lunch. You know?
Yeah, you've established those boundaries.
Yeah.
We talked about that with Tim Buell, you remember?
Yeah.
Pretty much the same idea. Like I forget exactly what she does. Maybe she was a nurse. he worked from home and their hours were never really lining up. So like she would be coming home, you know, around 5 and excited to call Tim, and Tim's working from home and he sees 5. It could be like 4:30. Yeah, she would get out like before 5. Mm. So she would call him around like 4 or 4:30. He's like trying to get crunch time in. And eventually he just had to tell her like, whatever we want to talk about, like, let's just table it to a few hours or,
yeah.
You know, I need to establish that space, that boundary.
And sometimes those are difficult questions. Those are difficult conversations, but I think if you give your partner the benefit of the doubt, especially somebody that you've connected with along the way,
yes.
You are, if you don't give them the benefit of the doubt, you're doing you both each other a disservice. But if you already established that love and that respect for each other, then you should be able to have those difficult conversations.
Yeah.
I've known people throughout my life that it's like as soon as their partner is around, they're just like, oh, I've got to
just drop everything.
Dudes, you're like, they don't like that. They need you to be, you know, be yourself, give them space and then come together. You know, I don't know. I mean, and everything's different. I'm not a marriage counselor.
Yeah.
but you have been married for 23 years, so.
Yeah.
And that did include a year of counseling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'll put a bow on this part of the conversation by telling you I left a road gig after being on the road for about 10 years back in 2017. And you know, my kids were in high school, being teenagers and everything, and things weren't going great. And my wife's like, we need you home. Great. No worries. Just come home. We'll figure it out. So I came home, started working more around town, doing all this stuff. And then she's like, okay, you're here physically. Great. We're so glad. But you're still on the road. Your brain is still on the road. Like you're still like, mentally you're not aware of what we need from you when you're home and you're doing these things. And there was just this, it came to a point where I'm like, she's right. I am completely gone mentally. And so we decided, I had never done counseling before and I wasn't sure how I was going to receive it. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I really loved it. And if anything, I was the one that was talking most of the time. Mm. And learned a lot. And there was a lot of difficult but guided conversations that that helped us through that time, you know, and that was just before the pandemic. So I mean, you know, that was 3.5-4 years ago, and it has stuck in really beautiful ways.
Yeah,
wow.
So glad to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
So I want to go back to the podcast, to your podcast, not our podcast.
Let's go.
Like, yeah. I'm curious if you had a point. I know for Nate and I, like, we had talked about the idea of a podcast, but I remember going through the Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru on the way to work, and I remember calling you, Nate. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah.
Like, it was a specific moment where we talked and we're like, let's do this. Like, it was a very specific moment that I remember. So do you have any story like that? Or what was the genesis? Bring us back to, you know, before working drummer, and then the moment that it kind of clicked, that you're like, I have this idea and I'm going to go for it. You know?
Yeah. It goes back to that time when I was on the road. The band I was working with was spending a lot of time out, and it had gone through some personnel changes, and I felt like it was an opportunity for me to then interject my own ideas of how to make this situation better, how to become a part of the creative process, whether it was producing new records, what gigs we were going to do, how we were going to present ourselves in the industry and different things like that. And it didn't really go very far. And I felt like it was just the guys, it was a great band, super talented people, but I felt like they were just kind of in a state of arrested development and thinking old school. And I'm like, things are changing. And we're talking 2015, 2014. Mm-hmm. Like the way music is distributed, the way people are consuming content, the crowd we're trying to reach, longevity. And I've just felt like we're kind of going backwards. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I've hitched my wagon to this. This is my only gig. Mm-hmm. And I have no say in it. but I feel like I want to be creative. I feel like I want to do something, and I'm not really a songwriter. I'm not. How do I express myself, express my desires to create something that, and then it occurred to me, podcasts. And we're, again, this is in the early stages of podcasts, yeah. But I'm like, I can do that. And my interest in what other people and my peers are doing and how they're doing it and the psychology behind it is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really listening to, there weren't a lot of drumming podcasts. There was, what, I'd Hit That, Drummer's Resource. There was a couple others that are no longer around anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't really listening to them, but I started to listen to them, and I quickly realized I can do this.
Yeah.
And with some of them, I could do it better.
Yeah. Yep.
And I can ask some questions that I feel like aren't being asked, and get inside of the mind of this stuff. And my best friend had just moved to town, and I was looking for an excuse for us to work together again. We'd been in bands together, and he was the tech guy. And so I was like, I've got an idea. Can you help me build the website? I don't even know how to record this stuff. I've got GarageBand on my laptop. We're talking base level stuff. Yeah. He's like, yeah, we can do this. What kind of name? And so we coffee talk about drums, all these different things. But I remember laying on the bed in the hotel room, and that came to me. And then I called him, and then we got together, and we sat in Starbucks, and so we're writing ideas out. We had a logo. It's not even like it is now.
I think coffee is the commonality here. There's Dunkin' Donuts, now Starbucks.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Drink enough coffee and you'll have great ideas.
That's right? True.
And I don't even remember the names of some of the first ideas, but when we came up with the name Working Drummer, I was like, you know what? I feel like there's podcasts out there that are interviewing celebrity drummers, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. That's great. And I've read about these people in magazines all my life. And some of them are my heroes, but I want to know what my friend Nick Buta is doing this weekend and how he got that snare sound on that record. I want to find out what makes Keo Stroud tick and how he is such a social butterfly and what his background is. And I know these people and they're in my phone.
Right.
And so we're sitting there, we hadn't even really came up with the name yet. And I was like texting Keo and Nick and all these other people. And I'm like, okay, I got Keo lined up for this. And my friend David Black we got him for, and my friend Mike's like, we don't have a website yet. I said, fuck it. I don't care. We are doing this.
Yeah.
I said, if you book it, it will light a fire under my ass to get it going and get it started.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was just exciting just to think that we're going to create something. And I mean, you could argue it's not songwriting, it's not this, but it's still something that I can call, even though I had an incredible amount of help from my friend Mike, who was kind of part of the team for a long time. It was still a chance for me to express myself with this platform and become as much a part of the audience and a student of all these things. And it's like, as any of the listener, and hopefully every time I think about preparing for an interview, I'm thinking about questions that I want answered, but I'm also thinking about all the listeners that are going to be checking it out.
And you do such a good job at that. Like being a host, as we know, is it's very challenging, you know?
Yeah.
Do you find it more challenging with friends of yours? Because there's a tendency to just want to chit chat and be social, but you have to kind of, you know, pull it back and think of that third party listener that's not in the room with you, you know?
Yes and no. It's interesting. When I had Trey Gray on, I've known him forever, and that was a lot of fun. And we kind of just cut it up. And that was entertaining because some of the podcasts that I'm a fan of, that informality is part of the entertainment factor.
Yes.
In it. And I think that is important. And when I was getting ready to interview Chad Cromwell, who's one of my heroes, we went to his studio and he goes, yeah, man, I checked out your interview with, that's my Chad Cromwell imitation. I checked out your interview with Trey Gray and you guys sounded like y'all were mates for a long time. You're like, y'all were, and I'm like, I'm glad.
Good.
You're like, yep, yeah, I'm doing something right. That's the whole point.
You felt that way. Yeah. Zach is a big fan of WTF, Marc Maron, and that formula. And when he came on board, he wanted to be a part of that. And one of the things that he brings to the table in this concept is, it doesn't matter who your guest is. Are they a good interview? Is it a good conversation?
Right.
And that seems obvious, but I've had people on that I completely adore and are great drummers, and I feel like have a lot to say, but are sometimes a bit more of a challenge.
Yeah.
To extract that information cohesive manner that creates flow. Now, I edit in post, so I can shrink it, the ums, and squeeze it together.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, some people, there's a flow about it, but I've learned to just be prepared for anything. Some people are easy and some people are not. But the thing that has been easy to remember is, because of the name that we came up with and then as it evolved, no matter who I'm talking to, even if another podcast just interviewed Todd Sukerman or Trey Gray or whoever, and I've got them the next week, what do I want to take from them? And it's, I guess the reason I bring up somebody like Todd Sukerman is, you can go watch or listen to an interview and find out about his history and all the things and how he does. But what does he do? What can we discuss that can be applicable to someone like me,
right,
that is a working drummer that's doing, you know, all types of gigs, from playing covers in bands to doing sessions with brand new songwriters.
Yeah.
From there at the base, that I think a lot of people, most of us are doing, you know, and I think that stuff's important, and that's how you build your career. You start there. But growing up, I was reading about established players that had been, and it's like, wait a minute, how did you get here? How did you become Steve Gadd? How did you become, you know, Steve Roney, Steve Smith, the Steves?
Yeah.
There's a story.
Who named you Steve?
Right.
I need to know.
You know what I'm saying? And
right. I think we share that same, you know, the impetus to our podcast as well. It's like we didn't just want to talk to the celebrities that you'd hear about, like the end result, but not how they got there. Or,
yeah,
you know, the drummers that are in the middle of that journey.
Right.
Well, what you were saying really I've been thinking this for a while. I remember years and years ago, Matt Garska posted something on Facebook, and it was something to the effect of, if you are practicing correctly, you should eventually become your own favorite drummer.
Mm.
And that, I had to really ponder that for a while. And I think that's true at some level, or a lot of levels. And I think that's applicable to what we're doing. Like, when you look at another podcast, you go, that's great. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm inspired by that. But here are the questions I would want to ask if I were interviewing. And then you go, I make that decision. And that's this great, cool, artistic thing we get to go. I still want to know, like, what makes you tick in my own particular way? I want to scratch that itch for me. Mm-hmm. And I know there are more people like me who have that same itch they need scratched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling.
Right. And I was not getting that from other podcasts that I was listening to. And I mentioned before we started recording, I've been binging on Bart Vanderzee's episodes with Drum History. He's been doing the equipment of Neil Peart. And he has history. We've got Mike Dawson's drum candy. And it's like, I can go to those and pick up on that.
Yeah.
I've discovered drummers in Nashville through you guys that I had never heard of, and what they're doing in the arc of their careers.
Mm.
You know, so it's like, it's so great. And the other thing is, this is another aspect of what inspired me to start the podcast, was as long as I have been in Nashville, and that's been since 2000, playing drums and playing music is such a personal thing. When we discover that, we discover that love and that passion for it. It's such a personal thing in our basement of our parents' house or wherever to do that. And then we take that step into the larger world to actually allow people to hear what we're doing. We start playing in bands and doing all this stuff. And then we expose ourselves to the broader community in a music city like Nashville or whatever, or on social media. And that can be very overwhelming.
Yeah.
You are exposing everything about yourself. And when you are tied into something that is a big part of your identity, it's even more overwhelming.
Yeah.
So there's something that's very freeing about creating something that's not about drum. That's not my playing.
Yeah.
It's just me talking and having a conversation. And I feel like I don't own it. I feel like I could just like put it out there. And if somebody likes it, great. If they don't, great. I don't feel as intimidated by or need to have the desire for people to like my podcast as much as I want them to like my drumming. Does that make sense?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I think I'm going to learn to play bass and then do a few gigs and be like, eh, I'm really a drummer, but fuck it. I'm going to play bass and stuff like that.
So you're doing right.
Yeah. That's true. Bit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, there's a different feeling about that because that's not how I identify, you will.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
So when I'm just more covetous of my drumming and that than I am the podcast. This is supposed to be fun. Drumming's supposed to be fun too. That's the wrong thing to say, but I felt like I could just take more risks and put it out there. And because it's not about me, it's easier to promote. It's easier to publish. Yeah. It's easier to put out because of an interview style podcast, you're not posting about you. You are posting about your guest. You're posting about something that we all can take away from.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's great, man. Yeah. I love hearing that. It's definitely inspiring.
Well, it's just great to know that we're kind of on the same page about that. It's very pleasing to hear.
Yeah, it's kind of validating too.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're done, maybe not this one, but when you're done with an interview, do you walk away like feeling like you just did a gig or a session?
That's a good...
I mean, I won't speak for you, but I sometimes, like, yes, in the way that I'm both sometimes exhausted and energized simultaneously. I'm like, that took a lot out of me. But that was fucking great. Like, wow, what a cool conversation. There have been five or six that we walked out and we're looking at each other going, wow, what a mind-blowing experience to get those questions answered, to just the back and forth was so good. I mean, that's kind of what good conversation is, period.
Yeah.
And doing it in this format, I feel like it puts a microscope on it and it really, just cranks it up.
Right.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way, actually. It's like when you were a little kid and you had like your favorite athlete, maybe you got to meet, or one of those, like, or your favorite drummer, obviously, or even like when you're in school and you had like a really good like seminar and like someone gave like an hour presentation, you walked away like feeling inspired. Mm-hmm. It's almost like that's how I feel after, but it's happening like multiple times a month.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hmm.
Similar, but.
Right. I think it's you're using your time in such a way where it's just like, I'm growing from this. I'm growing, you know, I've learned something from this. You're feeling energized by the things. And I've noticed that with it. And I think it becomes a little bit like a drug in the way of that playing is a drug, where you're just kind of like, I can't wait to do this again.
Yes.
It's going to be fun. And, you know, Zach and I have very honest conversations with each other about the work that we're putting into it and how we want it. And there's times in our lives where we're just, it's like, oh, we're doing everything we can to get the episode out that week. And it's like, man, this is just a little overwhelming. But we check in with each other and it's like, this is good. We're having fun. This is, you know, we're not only are we creating something and we're learning from it, but we're building relationships and we're doing it in such a way that feels organic. And I don't know if you guys have felt that too, where I know like you're at Pearl and you guys are playing and you're doing all these things and you're taking the normal route as far as growing your community and your network. But this feels like an additional way to do it in a really honest and organic way that's not the look at me, look at me, look at me.
Right.
That is somewhat the trend now that we have the ability to post so much about ourselves and things like that.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, it's a different feeling now because we've had people come up. I've had people come up to me and be like, hey, you're Nate, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, they're like, hey, I really like your podcast, which my younger self is going, hey, remember when you imagine people coming up and being like, hey, I really like your playing. this isn't it, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, whoa. I had someone come up, and I think I mentioned this before, but someone came up and was like, yeah, man, I moved here because of it.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, that's...
Whoa! All right.
That's wild.
That's crazy. That's... It feels so, it's such an honor. It feels so good.
Having that
good.
Impact. And like hearing like the 400th anniversary episode, you probably can speak more to that. Just like the impact that you have on everyday drummers.
Yeah, you've heard it like crazy. Yeah.
How inspirational is that to you guys keep doing what you're doing and to not call it quits, you know?
I think that's another thing that keeps us going is, and I equate it to like being in an indie band where you know, put enough money together to produce a recording and then you go out on tour and like lose a bunch of money and be like, okay guys, we're done. I'm going broke being in this band. Yeah. And then all your fans are like, hey, when are you guys coming out with, when are you going back out on tour? And you're like, oh, well maybe we should do it and keep going, you know, let's do vinyl this time. And then you go out and you're doing it again. You're feeling drawn to put something out because there's an expectation. And beyond the listeners just being inspired by the conversations about drumming and the business is people are drawn to the personal stories that are being introduced.
Yeah.
And again, like what you guys are doing as well, beyond just the drumming and the industry, but the personal stories that people relate to so much. And so, although the episode 400, we had a bunch of listeners call in and, you know, do their own recording and talk about their favorite episodes, what things they've gotten from the podcast that they still use to this day. And I was thinking, that was really cool. But there have been instances that I have received emails and messages from people saying, you talked about suicide with this guest. And I've experienced that myself. And I had a guy say, my wife doesn't even know that I attempted suicide 9 years ago.
Wow.
But listening to your conversation with this drummer who did the same just was so good for me to hear.
Yeah.
And or I had a recent interview with Jamie Wallum from Tears for Fears, who has been in and out of – it was – dealing with addiction, and his journey on that brought more people to the table and saying, I needed that thing. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things, that to me is real inspirational as far as going beyond the drums, going beyond music, going back to what really is important at the end of the day. And I'm proud of those moments. And again, having those listeners that I have done a couple interviews with drummers that started listening to us when they were in high school and then decided to, over time, get up and get themselves together and move wherever, whether it was here or another place. And I discovered them through their work. And I was like, man, you should be on the podcast because you're doing this. And they're like, you know what? I was listening to you guys when I was in high school, and the reason why I'm actually doing
this, on
tour with this major label band is because of this episode and that episode.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So not only were they moving, but they were like, I made the decision to like move from Mississippi or move from Michigan or whatever. And some of them, I would get these emails you know, and it's just crazy. That's but you coolest, realize yeah. how small the community is
yeah.
in that way.
But yeah. also just how like something as small as a podcast that you started in your basement or your living mm-hmm. room, wherever, how big of an impact that can actually have, you know?
And sometimes it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, like, is that yeah. is that ever intimidating? Because when I realized that, mm-hmm. That's more influence than I feel like I can wield responsibly, you know?
Yeah. And having a partner is really good to bounce ideas off of and say, you mean, because there's been, keep in mind, it's been a little over 8 years. And there's things that in our society, and we've interviewed people all over the world, mostly United States, but we have, you know, guests from England and Australia and Canada. And but mostly, if you think of in society what's gone on, there's some things that are just really hard not to talk about.
Yeah.
Whether it was COVID or whether it was shooting or yeah. race issues or other things like that, that luckily I've found a kinship in Zach that these are important things to us aside from music. Mm. And I'm like, I think I want to talk about this. He's like, do it. Let's do this, you know? And I'm like, okay. And so that responsibility to our audience, our listeners, means that you're going to piss some people off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's okay.
It's like any piece of art, you know, you put it out there and, I mean, similar to the podcast, right? You put out the art, you put out music.
Yeah.
You put out a single and you kind of just, you're proud of it and you're done with it and you kind of let the world decide what that's going to look like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you can't think about what other people are going to think about what you're doing and that dictate the direction of whatever it is you're creating.
Yeah.
You need to be true to yourself. You need to be true to your own vision. Because if you're always chasing something based on outside opinions, mm-hmm. you're going to fail every time. You need to be true to yourself. And I mean, granted, there's compromise when there's another person or there's other people involved. But, and you guys doing this together is different than what Zach and I do because we each do our own thing, but we do come together and kind of have a similar vision.
Yeah.
And I think because he came in after I had already established kind of a formula in essence being about the working drummer, not the celebrity drummer
right.
per se, he was all about it, you know.
Talk us through quickly how you guys met.
So a buddy of mine connected me with Nick Ruffini, who does Drummer's Resource.
Yeah.
And love Nick wanted to start a larger podcast network at the time. And he had a guy, Zach Albetta, that was writing a column called The Working Drummer.
Mm. Oh, my God.
And he was like, what if you did this with my – and basically it was like, you've already got the name on your podcast. What if you connect with this guy? And I'm like, man, this is kind of my thing. But it would be cool to be a part of your podcast. And he was getting Daniel Glass involved. And I'm like, and this is within the first year. And I'm like, this is kind of getting big.
Yeah.
Maybe I should consider bringing someone else in. So I had a few conversations with Zach and I quickly realized that I like this guy. I like where he's coming from. I checked out his playing. We laugh about this later. I said, I watch you play and I'm like, damn, this guy can play.
Yeah.
I said, which is good because if you suck, that would have been really awkward. But
he's a practicing drummer.
Yeah, he's a great player. And then when Nick kind of just dragged his feet on it, Zach and I had become friends. Mm-hmm. And Zach's like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do this. Let's do our own thing. And I was like, okay. Because also my wife's like, you have two jobs. You're playing and you're doing this podcast, but you're only getting paid for one of them.
Yeah.
This is like, and I'm like, you're right. Like, this is overwhelming. Every day I'm working on the podcast, promoting it, editing, doing the scheduling the next. I was doing it every week.
Yep.
And I'm like, man, it would be great to share the load with somebody else and somebody that I trust and I feel like I could connect with. And that's how that started to go. And he was very receptive to my way of doing things. And then as we began to trust each other, there was a lot of back and forth with doing things in a very democratic way. And it was just, it was kind of like he would have ideas and I would have ideas, and then we would come to a compromise if needed be.
Yeah.
But I feel like we laugh about this. As much as we are alike, we are different, where he's like, I'm the party of no, you're the party of yes. You're always like, let's do this, let's do that, let's do this. And he's like, no, fuck that, we shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do that, we should do that. So there's always this like nice little middle ground.
Nice.
He keeps me from like going over the top, and I push him to, you know, no, we could do this. Oh, okay, okay, well, we should do. Oh, I'm glad you said, I'm glad we did this.
It's a good balance, and probably. Yeah. I feel like we definitely have that same duality.
Yeah.
Where, I'm kind of keeping things grounded, and
you know. I'm a derailer. But that's my superpower.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah. And Zach's been a good friend. He was in town a couple weeks ago for the Ain't Too Proud to Beg musical. And
yeah, I know. He's been crushing that. It. Yeah.
It's been great.
Just love seeing his videos.
Yeah. And so my wife and I went out and saw him play. Oh, and the whole show was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then just to hang out with him, and it's like.
Did you get behind the pit access?
No, no. I didn't. Okay. I didn't. But it was funny because when we were planning to go out and do this, my wife's like, I like Zach. I'm so glad we're doing this. I'm like, this will be fun. We went out and had cigars and sat around and laughed and had a good time. And we were planning a podcast with the spouses.
Oh, well, that's going to be
and
super cool.
We're going to try and rope some other people in, but we're going to talk about touring, and they are going to be the guest, and I'm super excited.
Yeah,
about
what a good idea.
Great idea.
Wow. My wife.
Where does he live again? Where's he based?
He is based in Atlanta.
Okay.
And his wife is super smarmy and funny, and mine is as well. And so to get those two together, and hopefully we can get a few more in the mix that have different experiences that we just haven't quite got it all worked out yet. But I think we want to do something like that just to kind of like totally turn the tables.
I love that idea.
That somebody That's being brilliant. Honest about, you know, almost afraid of what my wife's going to say. Thank God we edit and post.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Serving the Nashville, Brentwood, and Franklin areas, Music Lab Nashville offers comprehensive hands-on music lessons in contemporary techniques and styles. Students learn from the most qualified instructors in state-of-the-art practice and performance settings. All ages, all styles, all levels. Visit nashville.musiclab.co to learn more and to sign up for a free trial lesson.
Should we switch gears? Talk Nashville a bit?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Nashville Drummers Podcast. Seems appropriate.
We've talked drumming. We've talked podcast.
Oh.
I think we're done. Oh, Nashville.
Dude, Nashville.
Nice. Yeah.
What's that other thing that we always talk about? Oh, right. The city.
Fried chicken. Okay. Yeah, we'll get there at the end. Yeah, hot chicken. Okay, so you moved in Nashville 1999? Or you said 2000, right?
Yes.
Okay, Ginger Baker.
No, it's okay. I'm prepared. I can handle that now.
See, yeah, you're right.
I got my notes. Okay, so you've been here probably longer than most of our guests, so I definitely want to get your perspective, of course, on the change in the city.
Gosh. Yeah.
You know, you've performed in some pretty awesome venues like the Ryman. I've seen you on Broadway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so talk to us kind of like your first few years in Nashville, kind of how you got started.
So I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and went to school there. And right after college at Capital University, where there's a lot of great players, Matt Billingsley went there, Matt Iceman went there, Aaron Apter. It's a small liberal arts college. But anyways, worked for Jim Rupp at Columbus Pro Percussion for about 5 years and stayed in town and just like worked with everybody I could. And the talent in that city was amazing, but I saw people struggle. And so I had friends that were moving to Nashville, and that was my inspiration to go someplace where I felt like I could make a living and just play a lot of drums.
Yeah.
You know, and because I think when you're young, you think all I got to do is get good and I'll become successful.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's kind of what we're taught. It's in some ways the failure of the public school system is like just practice and lessons, and you know, you spit out the notebook, but then it's like, okay, great, you're a good player, but have you marketed yourself? Do you know how to get gigs? Are you a good person? You know?
Exactly.
All that other stuff.
And I saw in like so many cities and towns around the world, there is talent that can be found. But I saw these players struggle, and I thought I need to be part of a larger community. And so in, I guess, late 99, but technically 2000 was when I came down here, and just didn't know. My plan wasn't to move to Nashville. My plan was to move away from Columbus, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
To try something new, to get out of my comfort zone, because I grew up there. I went to college there. It was, I knew it. And it's like, I need to push myself. Yeah. And between all the major places you could go, Nashville seemed to be the most parallel to a place like Columbus, as far as the place I could raise a family that I had a desire to do. My wife and I were dating. She was working overseas. I was like, here's my opportunity to go. And then we got married shortly thereafter. But I just didn't know what to expect. I had connections, I had friends, and that helped me get started with some singer-songwriters and working in some studios and different things like that. But my time at Columbus Percussion led to my gig working at Forks Drum Closet, because Gary knew Jim and one of the guys was leaving. And so immediately in 2000, like after being here for 6 months or so, I started working at Forks.
Man, talk about like an amazing first gig in Nashville to kind of set your...
Right. And I'm sure you saw, you experienced this at Pearl, where it gives you this like window into what's going on really quick.
Yeah.
You learn how different a place like Nashville is from a place like Columbus, based on the drummers and musicians that you're serving. The people that I met that I didn't know much about country. I knew Larry London and Eddie Bears was. That was it. I didn't know any of these other drummers. And so when somebody comes in like Greg Morrow, and he's just this really sweet guy and all this stuff, and you're like, who is this? Is that? That's Greg Morrow. It's like, wait a minute. I was learning some songs by this band and I've heard his name. He's on this record and that's really great playing. And then I start to learn about what Nashville is producing.
Right.
You know, and then some drummers would come in, and we're talking about the 90s. That was a boom era for everybody in the session world. You had players like Eddie Bears and even Greg that were doing nothing but master sessions. And so everybody, if they were doing master sessions, all that demo work where the B and C players, and for lack of a better term, everybody was doing sessions all the time. Mm. Well, as that era came to a close, everybody that was doing master sessions started taking the demo work, the less than master sessions. And so when those guys go down, you get pushed down. Mm. But they still remain the same beautiful people they are as players, as human beings. But one thing I found interesting was some of the players that were getting the work were coming in and be like, you just moved to town? Yeah, it's not the same anymore. It sucks. Like, man, I used to, you know, the 90s was the time to be here. And I'm like, oh, great, great.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just, yeah, I wouldn't even bother. Just go ahead and move back, man, if you got time. And just all this bitterness. And I'm like, I don't believe you. I don't trust you. There's more here. And I feel like you're giving up. And I'm not ready to give up.
What made you respond in that way? Was it, like you said, more of a desire to leave Ohio? Or did you actually have those tangible, you said you have a few friends already in Nashville.
Yeah.
You just wanted to believe in that, in the dream, or just like you knew that there was more to the city. That
Yeah. I've always been very, very stubborn. And it's it's like I've put everything into this. I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not leaving. And at the time, that term, it's a five-year town. You know, give it 5 years, whatever. I don't know how true that is anymore.
I've heard 10 years. I've heard
five.
I know. It's like, which one is it?
It's like, I just got here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then things started to build, and then more gigs started to come in. And then it would conflict with working at Forks. And unfortunately, it was like a day or two after 9/11. Gary's like, I need you to come in and I heard you took this gig, and I think we've gotten to the point where you need to make a choice. Either you're working here or you're taking gigs. Hmm. And we kind of came to a head, as much as you can with somebody like Gary Forkham.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't move here to, even though my degree is in music merchandising, I didn't come here to work at a drum store again some more. This was my frame of mind at the time. And I was like, I'm going to have to quit.
Yeah.
But I wasn't gigging enough. So, man, I was doing other things. I was working part-time in a grocery store. I was doing part-time jobs for, like, ladies at church, painting, doing anything I could do. But my expenses in my life was affordable and such that I could balance things out. And then babies started to happen.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, we could save money on childcare by me staying home, because I'm not traveling a lot. And then things started to build from there, and it became juggling a lot of different kinds of gigs. And there were a couple corporate things that came in that helped me pay the bills. Broadway was an option for me. It doesn't pay as well as it does now.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, because we've talked to a lot of guests. It seems like Broadway has become a lot more approachable. Like, people that moved here a week ago, and they're in there playing, you know,
yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
How did you approach that? Was it a harder threshold to actually get in and start playing?
Up until recently, all the people that I played with down there were established groups. I wasn't jumping around from shift to shift and doing things like that. And through a corporate gig that I was doing with a band, the singer had a band that was playing, and they would play a couple times at the stage, and they're like, hey, we need a drummer, come out and sit in with us or whatever. And that became like an established thing. But it was the same, almost the same group of, like, we're talking like 6 or 7 people on stage. It was a whole ordeal. And they had original music, and there were only a few clubs down there. And so it was like, they were going on the road. We were going down playing cowboys down in Dallas. We were doing private things. So I was asked to go down and play down there. And I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't something that I necessarily thought to seek out. Then when I started working with another band that started to do more, I knew people at the stage. And then they discovered us, and they're like, you need to come play at the stage. And so every time we were in town, we would play there. And so, like, that started to grow my network of people that were playing. And there was something about, and I know not everybody's into this, but there was something about settling in for the 3.5 hours and just giving it all you got. And I was really fortunate to play, and still to this day, play with really great musicians down there that I just feel fortunate to be a part of. And there's been times when I've kind of floated around and been with different groups, but there's something about a group that has its 300 songs or its 3,000 songs, but you all know each other.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost consistent, with the occasional sub here and there, that gives you a little bit of an edge when people are walking up and down the strip.
Yeah.
And you can tell great musicians, but you can tell when it's all thrown together, and you can tell when it's an established group that have their quirks and their bandisms that make it so entertaining and so cool. Then that became something that I really enjoyed. And so it turned into relationships that would kind of spawn off into other artist gigs here and there, that might have lasted maybe a summer tour. Because you never know, like, oh yeah, I play with so-and-so, but you're only getting paid per show. Mm-hmm. And you're not in that network with an artist that is paying salary or something like that. Right. So you have to piece your year together. You have to piece everything together.
Yeah.
And then the band that I've been talking about, Savannah Jack, that was out for like 12 years, they got busier and busier and started putting out records, and were on a label for a short time. We were still playing Broadway, but we were opening up for, you know, all these different people, whether it was Vince Gill or Peter Frampton or Doobie Brothers, and then doing corporate things to compensate for the road things and things like that. And then putting records together and putting out that stuff and like trying to do the big push for that stuff until it turned into like looking for gigs just for the money. Mm-hmm. And then the vision and the artistic vision started to kind of dissipate. I think that was just the nature of it. But that goes back to my other thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's cool hearing all this. I mean, because like you really embody, like you are the working drummer. You know what I mean? It's like you are the person to have the podcast and to just really embrace this culture and this community.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm stupid or stubborn, but when we all know people that are a part of a situation, an organization, a band, an artist, and that's their bread and butter. And then the artist quits, dies, fires you. You're like, uh-oh, now what?
Yeah.
And I think that's, I call it, what do you call it? When you diversify your portfolio,
yeah,
there's more security.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you're juggling lots of different things, there's security. So last couple years, I was with a group called the Frontmen of Country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was three lead singers with established bands, mostly from the 90s. So the lead singer from Little Texas, Restless Heart, and Lone Star. Like 30 number one hits, 30 million records sold. You know, like they were doing one-offs here and there. It was people that I, because I think there are people that like, I don't do the Broadway thing. I think it's a waste of time. Yeah. All my connections with those groups and with producers that I'm working with and a lot of the sessions that I get are through my relationships with the people that happen to be working down there and that I happen to be working with. So yeah. I don't think you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater to make that kind of blanket statement, especially this day and age.
You mentioned Matt Billingsley. I mean, isn't that how he got picked up with Taylor, or is it maybe not that immediately, but like, I know he was down there playing a bunch.
He was,
you know,
we were sharing gigs
and
yeah, it's insane. I don't know exactly how it came about.
Yeah, we'll have to have him on.
Yeah.
Ask him.
Definitely.
With the Frontmen, I found myself back out on the road again.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, these guys were great to work for. When you deal with a lead singer, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
You think that times three, holy shit, that could be a mess. But they were nice. They trusted me. They gave me a lot of, I guess trust is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Like you tell me what the tempo is, whatever. And I'm like, okay, like this, it's been your band forever. But collectively, the three of us behind these guys have played more variety of music and with more bands than the three of them have.
Right.
You know? So they gave us a lot of that. Like you guys are the band.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. But they started working more and more. And it was one of those things that, are you a part of it? If you're a part of this, then this is unspoken, but it's like, hey, listen, we're going out and we're flying out in 8 days. We got a gig that just came through. And it's like, so it doesn't matter what you have on your calendar, you're going out. And like, if you open up your app right now, there's already a ticket for you. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like I had things booked. I had people relying on me to do, maybe it was a gig on Broadway. Maybe it was a track that I had to deliver by that time. Or maybe it was a session or something like that. I was like, this might be too much. This might be more than I realize. And the expectation of that was something that I feel like they needed somebody that was willing to be there for them. And so I, as professionally as I could, said, I love you guys, but I came off the road for a reason. And I'm losing gigs by being out here with you guys that I want to do. I want to play with 20 different musicians in 1 week. I want to do my podcast, record at home, play Broadway, play a singer-songwriter gig in East Nashville. I want to do all that stuff and juggle all those things. I crave that and probably still handle things financially the same, if not better, until these guys get more established. And I said, get somebody in here that wants to be here and be 100% part of this.
Yeah.
And they, almost all of them were like, we get it.
Yeah,
we get it. We'll miss you. It was fun. It's gonna be sad to see you go, but we understand. I'm like, thank you.
And man, you, I mean, you handled that so professionally.
I was, because it's, man, this town, as much as it's grown, is still too small to burn bridges or to let something get in the way. And it came down to just being kind of an odd fit. And so it was another one of those things. I mean, I couldn't like start laying down like other, you know, like how do I let people know I'm going to be leaving, you know, in a couple months. So if you hear of anything, you can't do that.
Yeah.
The rumors just will go. And then I don't want them to find out from somebody else. They need to hear it from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I left, it was like, okay, I don't have anything on the books for a little while. And my wife's again, she's like, don't worry about it. We've done this before. We've handled this before. There's a history that we have that, you know, something will come about. This year has been gotten busier and busier and busier.
That's so great to hear. Because when we first met a few months ago, we had breakfast. I felt like we were both kind of in similar.
Right, exactly.
It was the beginning of the year, and like we both had like zero gigs.
Yeah.
So it's cool. Like, and yeah, now I'm getting busier, and it's great to hear that, you know, you're getting busier as well. Which kind of like stay the course is kind of the lesson that I'm hearing.
Well, the last
especially
thing,
in this town. Right?
The last thing I'll say about this, and this is what I love about having the podcast,
is
that there was an opportunity that Zach saw. He goes, hey, I'm going to be in town. Let's get together and do an episode with just you and I. You just left a gig. I just started a gig.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how this is changing. And that's so therapeutic to just be completely, be completely honest about the frailty and the inconsistencies and the unpredictability of this business. And I feel like there is like a superpower in being able to be like, guess what? I don't have any gigs. Guess what? This is happening to me, I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
As opposed to posting all the stuff that I'm doing and all the stuff that, because everyone's life looks great. It feels like everyone's doing better than I'm doing. And we're all just trying to make it work.
Yeah, it actually feels good to kind of get over yourself, and you know, especially with social media, as you said.
Yeah,
I've talked to Nate a bunch about this recently, and I just had an audition.
Oh, cool.
Technically my first Nashville audition, which I didn't get.
Okay,
and it feels, but it went really well.
Yeah,
and it feels great to be able to tell people like, hey, I didn't get this.
Yeah,
or like, hey, I don't have any gigs coming up. Like, this is where I'm at. Just being honest with that, and like,
we all go through it, man. Yeah,
and now I've got some cool stuff coming up, and like, it's all good, you know.
And I've been candid about my struggles, and the response has been very positive.
Yeah,
and I feel like I've grown so much, and I feel like the podcast has been a vehicle for me to express those things that I feel like we're all thinking. Hmm. And so now that I'm off the road, and now that I left that band that I was with, and I've done all these things, and I'm working with new people in the last few years that didn't know me before, I say this all the time. People will say, you're like the nicest, easygoing person ever. And I'm like, it took a lot of work, you know, to get there.
Trust me, I haven't always been this guy. Yeah.
I feel like at my core I am, but I think life distorts reality that causes you to behave outside of who you truly are.
Yeah.
And there were points in my life, and there are points in my career when I just did not like myself. And I'm like, this is not who I am. And then that's when you have to take a step back. It's like, how do I take control of the situation so that I can be just a better human being?
Mm.
Because at the first thing that needs to happen is I need to be the best father and husband I can be before I even think about drums and everything like that, because that can go away. But this has to be right, you know, because who knows how long I can physically play drums.
Yeah, true.
But my partner is going to be the one that's going to be there to wipe my ass when I can't anymore. So she has to.
That's a good perspective right there.
Right.
You know.
Home recording.
Yeah.
I feel like we've all had a pivot to that. And I'm curious your experience with that, just moving here in 2000. And then, you know, now it's just like, seems to be a totally different world. You know, how easy or challenging has that been? Do you feel like you're in a situation where you've pretty much got a good thing going, or you're still like trying to figure it out? Or
it's always a process.
Yeah.
And it's not something I considered when I moved here in 2000, because think about the technology, it really wasn't available. Even when I moved into my house in 2009, I rebuilt a walk-in closet for a practice room, not even thinking about the space or recording.
Right.
Maybe thinking, oh, it'd be cool, you know, I can maybe, I think it's getting to the point where you can actually record a little bit. But like everyone else, I was moving that way. Pandemic hit. I'm like, okay, it's time to invest. Interviewing guys that were doing it. Had Kyle May on
just a couple weeks ago. A few days ago.
Yeah. I mean, his command of those sounds and everything, and how he's doing, how he's delivering.
Same, yeah.
So there's an example of a guest just a few weeks ago that I am completely picking his brain and finding out how he's doing what he's doing.
Yep.
So I'm learning all the time. At its core, I'm able to record up to, well, right now I could do up to 12 tracks, and I've figured out how to do it using all in the box stuff. I'm not using any outboard gear. Mm-hmm. And what I'm being asked to do 99.9% of the time is deliver raw drum tracks.
Yeah.
So it gives me a little bit of wiggle room to try and wrap my head around what compression, how compression works, how to apply it, how to apply all these other things, because that's not what people are asking for. They're like, just give me the best sounds you can from your acoustic drums and your performance and your concept of it, and then I'll take it from there.
Yeah.
So I still want to become a better engineer, but here's a couple of things that I've learned.
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah.
You know? And it's interesting because you, especially with social media, you see guys like Kyle that can not only play the drums, but also engineer and mix and make really good, like, record ready, radio ready sounds.
Yeah.
But it's good to hear from you. That's like, that's not necessarily what's being asked of you, you know?
And I think
it's cool to show that. And
I think for Kyle, I was like, you're sending fully produced tracks. But I think what he's doing is a lot of his clients are expecting this from him. Not all of them. He does a lot of raw tracks, but he can get in the door by saying, here's what these drums could sound like.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're like, that sounds great. Yeah, exactly. Send them over. And then he sends the raw tracks. And they're like, wait, that's not what. He's like, you want those? I could send those and do that. And then
pay up.
Because what you want is you don't want to do the single song for somebody. You want to be their drummer. Whether it's a singer-songwriter that is working on material all the time.
True.
Or it's the producer that is bringing in a bunch of singer-songwriters. And luckily, through my relationships with people on Broadway, as one of the resources, there's one producer that sends me at least 5 tracks a month, if not more. And during COVID, it was like 3 tracks a week. Mm-hmm. And he's working with all these different singer-songwriters. So if I could get like 6 of him, that would be amazing. The biggest takeaway for me for recording at home is how to be efficient. Because what you charge to record in a studio is different than the workload at home, as you know, because you have to be engineer, producer. You have to send a raw track. You have to send a mix to the person, the songwriter, the producer, to approve, and then wait to hear back from them. Meanwhile, you're like, how was that snare tuned when I did that track? Am I going to have to punch in a different bridge? Are they going to want something different? How do I make this consistent without having to completely start from scratch?
Yeah.
So not only I've got everything set up like you guys do. I've got mics, I've got a drum set and cymbals and everything dedicated to recording. So I could literally go in and do it. But I still have to know when to stop. Okay, I've done 7 takes of this. I know there's one in there, or maybe there's a couple, and then I'm going to pick from that and, you know, track list it and then put it together. So then I have to edit. I have to do that part of it. And then I have to mix it down and send it to the person. So it's taking me twice as long, 4 times as long to do one song than if you go in and did a 3-hour session and you did anywhere between 3 to 6 songs. When you're done with that session, you've done your job as a drummer and you've walked out.
Exactly.
You've walked out and you may not hear it until the final product. Well, this is just a little bit. So
it's almost like going back to podcasting, right? Like being the guest, you just walk in,
Yeah.
You do the interview, you leave, and then eventually it makes its way out
into the
world.
You guys aren't going to send this to me to edit?
That's a good idea, though. I like that.
That's great.
I'm pretty good at it, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done other podcasts editing.
Have you?
Yeah. I've gotten hired to do editing.
We'll talk after this.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. Yeah, efficiency is huge.
I'll tell you one thing.
That's the name of the game.
There's a friend of mine who I was bugging. I said, man, let me record. I'm starting to record some. This was like 3 years ago. So finally this year he's like, okay. And I was like, cool. And then his girlfriend wanted some stuff. I'm like, cool. I said, hey, listen, I know you're working with a producer in another studio to do all these other tracks. And so they're going to get the drum tracks and you guys are going to finish everything there. Let me tell you about what I asked you guys to charge. When I bugged you guys 3 years ago, that's kind of what I was charging. But as my skill set and my skill set has grown in my ability to produce better sounding tracks and cleaner tracks and everything like that, and I understand the system, I've given myself a raise every year. I've bumped it up a little bit. I've changed it, whether it's on air gigs or Sound Better, and made sure that I'm recognizing the amount of work that I'm putting into this.
I'm just writing that down, yeah. Give myself a raise. That's brilliant.
Well, you know, because it's like I'm learning more. I'm doing more than just drums.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're literally becoming worth more.
Right.
Yeah.
I told the singer this. I said, the only reason I tell you that is I'm not going to charge you any more than when I originally told you when I started bugging you guys 3 years ago. I love you guys. Great music. But if the engineer or the producer, whoever that you're taking it to said, if they like what I'm doing and if they inquire how much, you tell them this. Because this is what I'm charging now.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was a recent conversation. Cool. And so moving forward, it's like, how do you... And I've got a friend of mine that I've done like 6 records with over the last 12 years. He's still in the mindset of, oh, well, you did it for this. Can we do it for that? Like, man, you know.
Yeah, things change.
standard of living, the cost of living, not my standard. My standard of living has gone down. My cost of living has gone up. I mean, look at these. I can't even afford jeans that fit me.
The drum throne alone, man.
The drum throne alone is falling apart.
But I love that. I love that jacket. I was going to ask you
okay,
about
so this is an example. Yeah. My son bought this for $1. I bought it from him for $20.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, it's like you wouldn't go into a grocery store and be like, well, I bought eggs 8 years ago for this price, so now I expect this price.
And those are difficult things to contend with, and they're hard. They're tough questions to ask, but you have to be honest. And not only is it you're respecting your process and yourself, it's doing. If I keep lowballing my work, I'm doing the whole community a disservice because we're all in this together. And it's like, well, yeah, I could. Why don't I just call Dan because he'll do it for this amount? I don't need to have Matt do it because I could just edit it anyways. You know, it's like. You need to provide something that they can't get from anybody else, first of all, or they're coming to you for a thing that you do great. And then they may go to another person to do what you do great on a song. And you guys we both end up on a record or something like that. That's happened before. Mm. But you still have to respect yourself to be able to say, I'm sorry, this is what I do full time. This is my gig. And if I take the time out to work on your project, it means I'm not going to have time to do this for someone else.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
That's great advice, yeah.
And those are difficult conversations to have, but at the end of the day, you're going to be working with people that want to work with
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're going to want to work with too.
That's what Marcus Finney talked about.
Yep.
You're going to attract the talent that you want to be working with anyway, you know?
Right.
So if you lowball yourself, you're going to be working with the client that's going to be cheap, which is probably not going to be great.
Years ago, I was working with a songwriter that the guy had money and he would come to town and record these records. And then I was working at a friend's studio and so he goes, okay, we did 5 songs today. How much do I owe you? And I'd say, it was this amount that we talked about. Is that okay? And he'd go, when I hire a plumber to come to my house and this is his hourly fee, that's how much I pay him. Stop apologizing for the work that you've done. I've hired you for a reason. So stop saying, is that okay?
I'm not sure what you're going to say. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And my friend who owns the studio would do the same thing. He's just a super, he's like, well, this is the day rate that we talked about. Is that cool? He's
yeah, like, y'all it's need, like it's question marks.
This guy is from Southern Georgia. And he's yeah. just great. He's like, y'all need to stop that shit.
Yeah.
Just not, knock it yeah. off.
I love that.
You know, yep. this, y'all are worth more than this, but we've agreed on this.
Yeah.
Let's be gentlemen about it. Yeah. Now, how much do I owe you?
And then again, it. That comes back to like the schooling go. Of like, well, if I'm just a really good drummer, everything's going to be great. But then if you don't know how to have those conversations and know what you're worth and be confident and
where does that come from? Businessman, right. Know? Where does that come from? Right. Why don't we value ourselves more? Yeah. And does it come from, well, someday he'll get smart and get a real job and stop this whole drumming and music craziness? And yeah. so yeah. although we push back against that and on the outside, we're like, yeah, man, fuck that. I'm going to do music. I'm going to do, this is who I am. But I think deep down inside, and I'm older than you guys, so my parents grew up and were, you don't do music for a living. You don't, the arts is not where you make a living, raise a family. So I think deep down inside, we're always struggling with this.
Yeah.
Where like, oh man, I hate to ask money for this because this really isn't a real job. I should actually be doing something else. That's bullshit. Because if we spend an hour and a half on one song, it's the thousands and thousands of hours that we've spent honing our skills to be able to yeah. do that for an hour and a half that would take anybody a lifetime to figure out.
Yeah, forget yes. the cost of the microphones that you're recording, oh, and all the yeah. gear, like that.
The time, the energy, you know time I mean? Away from your family.
Yeah, so.
I mean, the anything, practice time.
Probably always underpaid.
My know? Work that we did for free.
Yeah. I think it's that. That's definitely that, for sure. I'm not disagreeing, but I also think it had, at least for me, it's something of like an imposter syndrome thing. You know, like, cause I go like, well, I'm not Dave Weckl. I'm not Vinny. Who am I to charge? Like, I've heard over the years what they would charge for various sessions. I'm like, yep. Well, there's this insurmountable gap between me and those legends who are charging this. I'm like, no, the thing is that gap isn't insurmountable. And if you put in that time and you become a professional, you can do, so you don't necessarily have to be them, but you can do something similar and you can charge a rate that's comparable to that. You're like, here's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm providing the thing. Here's my rate. And you don't, and like you said, yeah. you do not need to apologize.
But I will tell you, Vinny's tracks have been replaced by other drummers.
Really?
Weckl's tracks have been replaced by other drummers. Everybody has been replaced at some point because they did not fit the gig. Mm. There's a producer in town that was working with a singer-songwriter and says, I want this person on bass. We're talking insane, like legendary people that we all know.
Yeah.
I want this guy. It was like a super group. A lot of the people got replaced because it just didn't work. It didn't gel. It didn't fit the style of the music, you know? So yeah, I mean, these players, we aspire to be more like, to do, but I mean, to find your voice, to find something that is unique to you that you can serve, because the singer-songwriter that I'm talking about, that I'm having this conversation with, I mean, we have a friendship and a working relationship, but it's like, dude, you won't want to pay me this, but you think you're going to find somebody as good as me or that knows you and knows your music as well as I do.
Right.
You're going to pay a lot more or, I mean,
yep.
come on, that's just disrespectful.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it just comes down to just standing your ground. I moved to Nashville for a reason, to get away from people being undercut for their work ethic and their talent. To come to a place where music was actually considered a legit vocation. So why not jump in with both feet?
Love it. Dude, that's so much wisdom here. I could just listen to you talk and I'm loving this conversation, but good. Yes. Let's do just some quick questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, what's the last book you read?
Commander by Al Murray, who's part owner of the British Drum Company, but he's also a World War II fanatic, and he wrote this great book called The Commanders.
Cool.
Whoa. Okay.
All right.
He was a guest on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Okay. I stole this one from Tim Ferriss, but I love this question. What is, in the last year, I'll give you last 2 years, is your most valuable purchase under $100?
This jacket.
Love this jacket.
Love this jacket.
Yeah, we got it nice and crisp on the video. Like,
I could probably think harder about it, honestly.
Do you do the Nashville hot chicken?
Yeah.
Yeah? How hot?
Oh, it depends on where. Subculture is the restaurant to go to, award-winning.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
Whoa, yet. I haven't heard Subculture. Of
this. Dude, amazing. Hot chicken tacos, hot chicken sandwich. I do medium. It makes me sweat. Yeah, Subculture.
Cool.
I'm writing that down.
Two Chilean brothers. Oh. It's like gourmet food truck.
Where in town is that?
It's my part of town, so it's just south, okay. Around Nipper's Corner.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Nolensville, Old Hickory. There's that.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Matt, for the
dude,
time.
I'm honored.
It's been
again.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
dude, it's such a pleasure.
We've had a few guests on where we're going to want to have them on again. I think you're definitely one of those where there's just some of these topics I want to go deeper into, and especially like podcasting. It's such a pleasure to get to talk to you and
Man,
kind of learn
thank
your background.
You.
And
if Zach's passing through and you guys want to sit down with both of us.
Yeah, I only met him once at it was the last Music City drum show, or the first one.
Yeah.
But we barely got to really talk, so I'd love to meet him again and get to hang out. If you're not already listening to the Working Drummer podcast, I'm not sure why you're listening to our podcast, but definitely workingdrummer.net, right?
Yeah.
All the major platforms. Yeah. And then where can people get a hold of you?
I'll be on the side of a milk carton missing. I think it's, I honestly don't know what my, you can find links to my website through workingdrummerpodcast.net. I think it might be Matt Krause, MatthewKrause.net. But I'm on Instagram and the Facebooks. So yeah, I mean, if anybody needs to find me there, but yeah.
Cool.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Thanks for inspiring us to do what we do.
Same.
Hey, man. All he's got is a belly
full of whiskey. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nashville Drummers Podcast.
If you've enjoyed these podcasts, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you can help support this dream and keep the ball rolling for us. Believe it or not, it's not free or even necessarily cheap for us to make this thing go. To sign up, go to patreon.com/Nashville Drummers Podcast or click the link in our Instagram bio. All of your help is greatly appreciated.
Check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast.
This episode was recorded at Diamond Sound Studios, located in Nashville, Tennessee.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.